This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details.
And now we enlighten you with Ayah 260 to 263 of Surah Baqarah, recited by Shahriyar Parhizgar.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. وَإِذْ قَالَ إِبْرَاهِيمُ رَبِّ أَرِنِي كَيْفَ تُحْيِي الْمَوْتَى قَالَ أَوَلَمْ تُؤْمِنْ قَالَ بَلَى وَلَكِنْ لِيَطْمَئِنَّ قَلْبِي قال فخذ أربعة من الطير فصرهن إليك ثم اجعل على كل جبل منهن جزءا ثم ادعهن يأتينك سعيا واعلم أن الله عزيز حكيم مثل الذين ينفقون أموالهم في سبيل الله كمثل حبة أنبتت سبع سنابل في كل سنبلة 100 حبة والله يضاعف لمن يشاء والله واسع عليم الذين ينفقون أموالهم في سبيل الله ثم لا يتبعون ما أنفقوا منا ولا أذى لهم أجرهم عند ربهم ولا خوف عليهم ولا هم يحزنون قول معروف ومغفرة خير من صدقة يتبعها أذى والله غني حليم
In the name of Allah, and when Abraham said, My Lord, show me how you revive the dead. He said, Do you not believe? He said, Yes, indeed, but in order that my heart may be at rest. He said, Take 4 of the birds, then cut them into pieces, and place a part of them on every mountain. Then call them, they will come to you, hastening, and know that Allah is Almighty and All-Wise. Those who spend their wealth in the way of Allah and then do not follow what they have spent with reproaches and affronts, They shall have their reward near their Lord, and they will have no fear, nor will they grieve. An honorable word with pardon is better than a charity followed by affront, and Allah is all-sufficient, most forbearing.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard by the internet, FM, and satellites. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and Intelsat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is iranradio.ir. And now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you. Defense of Iranian combatants.
A senior Iranian lawmaker has said,
contrary to Washington's claims, America's
President Raisi has emphasized that
U.S. sanctions have failed to extract concessions from Tehran.
Iran Today.
In 1979, the Islamic Revolution in Iran succeeded, leading to the fall of Mohammad Reza Shah and the transition from monarchy to Islamic Republic under the leadership of Imam Khomeini. This marked a new beginning for the Iranian people. The revolution was not just a political change, it was a national uprising for comprehensive progress. Shortly after the revolution's victory, Iraqi dictator Saddam Hussein, backed by the full support of both Western and Eastern blocs, attacked Iran. The eight-year-long bloody war, as well as cruel sanctions that were imposed on the country, aimed solely at overthrowing the Islamic Republic. However, the relentless efforts of the Iranian people not only thwarted this malicious plot, but also astonished the plotters with remarkable advancements across various fields. One such area was science and technology, where the significant involvement of Iranians, both men and women, truly initiated a scientific renaissance for the country. In 1979, the Iranian people courageously rose against the tyranny of Mohammad Reza Shah. When they toppled the Shah, they were filled with hope, yearning for their homeland to achieve true independence, free from the influence of both the West and the East. One of the prominent slogans of the revolution was neither East nor West. It was a call for liberation from the shackles of both Western and Eastern powers, a call for true independence for the country. This independence was unattainable without national power, and national power was meaningless without advancements in science and technology. To explore Iran's scientific advancements post-Islamic Revolution, we spoke with Dr. Ruhollah Razavi Nejad, president of the Basij Scientific Research and Technology Organization. He noted that external pressures were the price Iran paid for its independence.
وقتی هم به برکت امام و انقلاب این پرچم انبیاء الهی بلند میشه.
When the blessings of the Imam and the revolution injected faith in God and self-belief into society, the enmity began against us in the form of war and sanctions. All of this began after the victory of the Islamic Revolution, as the enemy feared the people's will to manage their own country, their will to get rid of foreign intervention. However, the Iranians had made their decision, and thank God, they demonstrated resilience in this path. The transformations we have witnessed in the different fields, especially those of science and technology, in our country after the revolution, resemble a miracle.
Thanks to the guidance of the revolution's leaders, the young Iranian society gradually developed a sense of self-confidence. They came to this realization that there was no reason for Iran to remain merely a consumer in scientific fields. Just as it was a center of renowned scholars 1,000 years ago, the country could lead in science and knowledge once again. About 5 years ago, while the COVID-19 pandemic was sweeping across the globe and countries were collaborating to combat this deadly virus, Iran, under severe pharmaceutical sanctions, had to confront this lethal enemy alone. In a short time, Iranian scientists developed technology for COVID-19 medications. And relying on domestic capabilities, they produce protective hospital equipment and respiratory aids for patients. To the astonishment of the international community, Iran emerged as one of the top 10 countries in the world for COVID-19 vaccine production. It's important to highlight that Iran ranks 7th in the world in pharmaceuticals. After the revolution, the country achieved the 7th position globally in the production of nanomedicine and the 4th in modern nanoscience. Moreover, Iran is the second largest producer of recombinant factor 7 and 8 for hemophilia and is among the top 5 countries producing high-power lasers. Additionally, it ranks 4th worldwide in the field of infertility treatment and 15th in ophthalmology. With these capabilities, Iran is also among the top 10 countries globally in heart and valve surgeries.
The developments in the health sector have been remarkable. You've witnessed it. There's no need to look back several decades. During the COVID-19 pandemic, we faced this virus head-on. What did the Islamic Republic do? It provided opportunities for its researchers, trusted them, and we ultimately witnessed the development of various vaccines in the country. Vaccines that came to the country's aid at a time when we were under pharmaceutical sanctions. Overall, after the revolution, knowledge-based companies were established in various fields with the participation of the people and government support. These companies are active in sectors such as pharmaceuticals, agriculture, nanotechnology, and more. And in all these areas, we rank among the top in the world.
With the victory of the Islamic Revolution, Iran embarked on a remarkable journey to recover from years of stagnation. This renaissance marked a significant leap into the realm of science and knowledge, turning scientific advancement into a pursuit akin to the Holy Grail for the nation. One area in which the Islamic Republic has made remarkable advancements is in space technology. In recent years, Iran has successfully developed and launched several satellites. Initially, the country's efforts in space technology focused on creating satellites for various remote sensing and telecommunications applications. However, engineers have now advanced space-based technologies to monitor forest fires, assess wetland conditions, and control farms and greenhouses remotely. Iran has made remarkable advancements in the field of nuclear technology. One of the most significant features of Iran's nuclear technology is that it's homegrown. The operators and managers of its nuclear power plants are all Iranian experts. This is a significant advantage for the country and symbolizes national self-confidence, reflecting the progress of internal educational and scientific structures. One notable achievement of young Iranian scientists in the nuclear industry is the development of tellurium-130 isotopes. This was accomplished through the design, construction, and operation of a square chain of 20 centrifuges. This isotope has numerous applications in medicine, particularly in the production of radiopharmaceutical precursors and the diagnosis of various cancers and difficult diseases, as well as in pharmaceuticals, industrial sectors, geology, agriculture, and nuclear sciences. Today, Iranian researchers have leveraged nuclear knowledge to produce over 50 diagnostic, therapeutic, and palliative radiopharmaceuticals. Furthermore, the hemostat powder used to prevent bleeding during surgeries is another significant medical achievement in nuclear technology. With the efforts of its scientists, Iran has joined the ranks of 5 countries with the technical expertise to produce this medical product.
ما تو مثلا صنعت هسته‌ای که حالا کشور رو خیلی هم دارن اذیت میکنن.
For instance, in the nuclear industry, for which the country is currently under great pressure, we're among the top 11 countries in the world that possess a complete nuclear fuel cycle. We have been enriching uranium for years. Before the revolution, we never imagined we could even operate a refinery without foreign assistance. Now we are enriching uranium, producing medicine, and creating radiopharmaceuticals for patients under the most severe sanctions. And creating radiopharmaceuticals for patients under the most severe sanctions. Despite immense external pressure and sanctions, this is a significant achievement. We are utilizing our nuclear technology in other fields like agriculture. This self-belief and self-sufficiency has provoked the enemy, who, under pretexts, seeks to halt our nuclear industry.
The Islamic Republic of Iran is now the 8th country to achieve a nuclear fuel cycle. The heavy water production project in Iraq stands out as a hallmark of Iran's advancements in nuclear knowledge. Iran's goals for developing nuclear technology include generating electricity through nuclear power plants, with the Bushehr nuclear power plant being a significant milestone. In September 2011, it was connected to the national grid, making it the first nuclear power plant in West Asia with a capacity of 1,000 megawatts. In the field of nanotechnology, Iran has made commendable progress, currently ranking 4th in the world in nanoscience. It is also the 3rd country globally to publish a strategic program in this area, having trained around 40,000 specialists. Nanotechnology spans a wide range of applications and is inherently interdisciplinary, relating to fields such as applied physics, materials engineering, semiconductor devices, supramolecular chemistry, mechanical engineering, electrical engineering, and chemical engineering. Experts believe that future national power will be increasingly determined by countries' capabilities in nanotechnology and their share of global nanotechnology production. The initial sparks of nanotechnology began in Iran in 2001, leading to strategic studies being initiated. 2 years later, in 2003, the Nanotechnology Development Headquarters was established. In 2006, policies and strategies to promote and develop nanotechnology were also approved. Today, various fields such as nanophysics and nanochemistry have established research institutes and departments, leading to significant advancements in various industries. Biotechnology is recognized as a crucial area for scientific, economic, and social development worldwide, with advancements in this field being a core indicator of progress. The creation and application of various biotechnological methods, including tissue culture, molecular biology, and genetic engineering, have revolutionized areas such as agriculture, medicine, natural resources, and the environment. In less than a decade, biotechnology products have shown remarkable results. Iran now produces over 95% of its pharmaceutical and vaccine needs for humans and animals, including complex, high-cost new-generation biopharmaceuticals used for cancer treatment, hepatitis, diabetes, and AIDS, such as insulin and hepatitis B vaccines. These advancements in recombinant drugs developed relying on domestic capabilities amid sanctions on some equipment showcase Iran's potential in biotechnology. We visited the Royan Institute, a leading center dedicated to interdisciplinary collaboration among academic and medical personnel. Their work focuses on infertility, embryo development, stem cell biology, and biotechnology, offering comprehensive services in infertility treatment and regenerative medicine. There, we spoke with Dr. Parvaneh Afsharyan, the Vice President of Research.
The Royan Institute was established in 1991 to address a crucial need in society, the treatment of infertility. Prior to its founding, Iranians had to travel abroad for infertility treatments, incurring significant costs. However, from the very beginning, this institute has also had a research and educational nature. It has not been merely a clinic. The distinguishing feature of Royan comparing to other clinics is its commitment to ensuring that its therapeutic services are grounded in comprehensive and up-to-date research and studies. This institute has always operated at the forefront of knowledge, consistently providing services that meet the highest international standards.
Curious about Royan's contributions, we asked Dr. Afsharyan about their notable achievements.
As you know, Royan has achieved many milestones, but among its latest advancements is its work in stem cells, which introduced two cell therapy products to the country's pharmaceutical market in the summer of 2024. These medications were entirely produced domestically by the Royan Institute. One of them is a bilayer skin product composed of dermis and epidermis for the treatment of bed sores or pressure ulcers and diabetic wounds. This skin is completely human. The other product is a single layer skin, which is larger in size. Again, this skin is entirely human and is used for treating third degree burns. These products must be stored and transported at a temperature of minus 80 degrees Celsius. So if they were to be imported from abroad, they would require specific conditions and special infrastructure, which is not easily facilitated. Moreover, we produce these skin products at one-third the cost of similar foreign products. More importantly, these items are the results of completely indigenous technology. We have developed it ourselves from the outset, rather than acquiring the technology from abroad and expanding upon it. In fact, these products are the culmination of 12 years of research at the Royan Institute.
This is Iran Today. Iran Today is broadcast every week on Fridays and Saturdays. The series analyzes major political, economic, cultural, and social events concerning Iran. So don't miss the opportunity to listen to Iran Today on IRIB English Radio.
We have a lot more to cover today, but first let's take a moment to catch up on the latest headlines.
Hello everyone, welcome to the news section of this program. Here we'll go over some important news headlines. Meh News, 70 billion kilowatt hour nuclear electricity added to Iran's grid, AEOI chief. Head of the Atomic Energy Organization of Iran, Mohammad Islami, says 70 billion kilowatt hour of nuclear energy has been injected into Iran's electricity grid so far. Unit 1 of the Bushehr nuclear power plant has injected 70 billion kilowatt-hour of electricity into the national grid, Islami said during a meeting with Iranian entrepreneurs, where he referred to the advantages of using peaceful nuclear energy to meet the country's various needs. Producing this amount of energy would have needed 105 million barrels of oil, he said, adding the nuclear electricity produced so far has saved $8 billion in energy expenses, while the total investment to set up the Bushehr plant is only $1.8 million. Azad News Agency. Iran-made nanobubble generator treats industrial wastewater. Iranian researchers at a knowledge-based company succeeded in indigenizing a hydrodynamic nanobubble device which can treat industrial wastewater with high efficiency and low cost without any problems for the environment and does not need any additives. This device uses nanobubble technology to treat wastewater. In this technology, nanobubbles are produced and after exploding, they create mechanical waves that are capable of eliminating suspended particles in wastewater, said Majid Bujaran, the chairman of the board of directors of the knowledge-based company. Iran front page. Iranian nanokit makes rapid detection of colon cancer easy. An Iranian knowledge-based company has made a significant advancement in disease diagnosis by introducing a nanokit for the rapid detection of colon cancer. Ziz Tashkhis Sanjish company has produced and launched these diagnostic kits, enabling quick identification of the prevalent cancer type. To date, around 600,000 individuals have utilized these kits as part of a nationwide screening program, and usage thereof is expected to increase significantly. According to the World Health Organization, the incidence of reported cancers in developing countries has risen dramatically from 15% in 1970 to a projected 70% by 2030. In Iran alone, approximately 12,000 new cases of colon cancer are diagnosed annually. Topnok. Iran Razi Research Institute makes over 60 billion doses of vaccines since 2002. Iran's Razi Vaccine and Serum Research Institute has produced more than 60 billion doses of vaccine over the last 23 years, said Director General of the Research Center Ali Eshaghi. In case of polio, more than 600 million doses of the polio vaccine have been produced, saving 100 million children so far. The disease was eradicated since the vaccine was made locally inside the country. Another example of Razi's successful vaccine has covered poultry, including 50 billion doses. It has been producing 40 types of vaccines for livestock as well. Iran is ranked 12th in the world and first in West Asia in terms of biotechnology, as 9.5% of the income of knowledge-based companies and more than 60% of their exports are related to biotechnology. Tehran Times. Iran's first AI park to be set up in 2 years. The first artificial intelligence park in the country is planned to be established in Tehran by the next 2 years, an official with the Vice Presidency for Science, Technology, and Knowledge-Based Economy has said. The main objective of the plan is to showcase the technological developments of the country and provide practical AI-related services to the People Mehnews Agency, quoted Mojtaba Alizadeh as saying. These services cover a wide range of fields such as the Internet of Things and demos of Iran's national AI platform, he added. The official went on to say that part of the AI processing infrastructure will be placed in the National AI Park. People as well as researchers who need the infrastructure to conduct their research will benefit from the AI Park services. Currently, government bodies, big corporations, and companies are working together to develop the park, Alizadeh further noted. And thank you for joining us in this section. Please do stay tuned for the main narrative.
The success of the Islamic Revolution was deeply rooted in the active participation of Iranian women, whose involvement was essential for the Islamic Republic's prosperity. This revolution laid the foundation for women to fully engage in national affairs alongside men, unleashing a powerful energy that propelled the country toward new heights. During our conversation with Dr. Afshariyan, we uncovered some intriguing insights about the dedicated personnel at the Institute.
ما اینجا خوشحال هستیم که 56% از همکاران ما خانم ها هستند.
I'm pleased to say that approximately 56% of my colleagues at this institute are women. These women, considering our cultural context, are committed to their roles as wives and mothers, while simultaneously dedicating their utmost effort and focus to research work. My colleagues do not engage in administrative tasks. Instead, they conduct research that requires significant time spent in laboratories, often necessitating late hours at work or even weekends. And I have to say jokingly that my female colleagues are not afraid of any animals. They often handle mice without hesitation or discomfort and carry out necessary experiments on them without any bodyguards.
After the victory of the Islamic Revolution, the status of women in various fields significantly improved. Women representing half of the country's population have become pioneers in many areas and have achieved a more influential role in decision-making processes and governance. While various statements have been published about women's participation before and after the revolution, evidence shows that there has been substantial transformation in this regard. We had the privilege of visiting Ms. Manije Armin at her home. A distinguished Iranian potter, novelist, teacher, and Quran scholar, she has also served as a jury member for the Jalal-e Ali Ahmed Literary Award, one of the most esteemed literary honors in Iran since 2008.
I have worked professionally in two major fields, one in fiction writing and the other is visual arts, particularly ceramics. However, my overall activities have been in journalism, research and teaching. I have taught from the first grade of elementary school to advanced university levels, gaining valuable experiences in this area. Additionally, I have experience in psychological counseling. These have been my main professional engagements, along with research on the Quran. I have published 17 titles and many articles and short stories, some of which have appeared in newspapers and literary collections.
Notably, the number of working and educated women across different sectors has seen a remarkable increase. According to published statistics for 2021, women's representation in university faculty positions rose to nearly 34% since the revolution. Additionally, the proportion of female students in Iranian universities increased by 56%. Efforts to combat illiteracy among women and girls have also been successful, achieving a 99.3% literacy rate. Furthermore, from 1979 until the end of 2021, over 9,500 female authors and 140 female publishers had been active in the country. Ms. Armin shared her insights with us about her novels and the literary landscape.
Someone remarked about my latest work. It's a difficult book. Well, I don't write stories for people to fall asleep. I write stories to awaken them. I take pride in this. We had a critique session where one of the critics said, "I've read at least 200 books after yours, but your book remains in my mind." He was referring to my historical novel, 16 Years, which takes place during the reign of Reza Shah.
Born in 1945, Ms. Armin possesses a unique perspective on the evolution of literature before and after the Islamic Revolution.
Before the revolution, how many writers did we have overall? The number was very limited. How many female writers did we have? Again, the number was low. How many significant works did women write? That number was also small. This is a reality. After the revolution, as people engaged more in politics and society and women took more active roles, there was significant growth among women. Currently, the number of female writers and artists exceeds that of men. I don't have exact or official statistics, but I can assert this confidently based on my observations. This is a very important point.
It is clear that the significant presence of women in higher education can be seen as a measure of educational justice. Achieving gender justice in education represents one of the notable accomplishments of the education and higher education system in the years following the Islamic Revolution. The fact is that the Islamic Republic's perspective on women differs fundamentally from the Western instrumental view and the view that acknowledges no social roles for women. Instead, it embraces a third perspective that recognizes the potential of women to contribute equally alongside men in social development while also playing a crucial role within the family.
I want to make another comparison between before and after the revolution, specifically regarding the content of books. I have conducted a detailed study on this, and while I won't go into it extensively, I will briefly mention that in the content of pre-revolutionary books, women were often portrayed much lower than men. They were mainly depicted as sexual objects and were very passive. The revolution itself led women to become more active and play significant roles, which in turn influenced the narratives and characters in literature. Before the revolution, only a few notable books were written. For instance, the book Zeba, Beautiful, by Mohammad Hijazi, published in 1933. It focuses on a woman who resolves everything through her beauty and sexual power. This gendered imagery improved slightly in the works of Jamalzadeh, where the plight of women in Iranian society was somewhat highlighted, but most women were depicted as deceived and victimized. Or another example, everyone knows that the works of Bozorg Alavi were political in nature, yet women played no real role in them. They were again portrayed as beautiful, self-sacrificing women who brought food for their husbands in prison or as very oppressed rural women, but they were not active, rather they were intensely passive. This portrayal of women in novels drastically transformed after the revolution.
In the years following the victory of the Islamic Revolution, the majority of female students showed a preference for studying in the fields of arts and medicine. However, in recent years, there has been a significant shift, with increasing number of girls pursuing degrees in all fields, including engineering. The presence of women in basic sciences and technical and engineering disciplines has become especially notable. Such trends reflect a broader societal change and a growing recognition of the vital role women play in various professional fields, showcasing their capabilities and aspirations beyond traditional roles. This shift not only empowers women, but also contributes to the overall development and advancement of society as a whole. Looking back, the Islamic Revolution of Iran was a significant turning point for the nation, an earnest effort to realize the potential it deserved. Ultimately, the country began to forge its own path towards a brighter future, despite all odds. That's all for today. Thank you from the whole team. Please do join us again same times next week. Take care.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
It guides us through life. It has taught us everything. We should learn and appreciate what it gives us. And try to apply them to our daily lives. How is it possible? By means of Quran.
این خوندن قرآن و تلاوت قرآن قدم اول است برادران من این قدم آخر نیست.
Reading and recitation of the Quran is the first step, brothers, not the last one.
هو الذي ارسل رسوله بالهدى ودين.
It is he who has sent his apostle with the guidance and the religion of truth, that he may make it prevail over all religions, though the polytheists should be averse.
والذي ارسل رسوله بالهدى ودين الحق ليظهره على الدين كله ولو كره المشركون.
تلاوت قرآن با صوت خوش با آداب که شیوه خاصی دارد، موسیقی خاصی دارد، روش خاصی دارد، اینها چیزایی لازم است.
Recitation of the Quran in nice tones should be performed according to particular methods and tones.
اما این کافی نیست.
But it's not enough.
مشکل بزرگ مسلمانان دنیا دوری از قرآن. دوری از قرآن. از قرآن.
Muslims' major problem is losing touch with the Quran. Quran. Quran.
کتاب
Seven, very much pressure.
and come to you. And O God, knowing that thou art our only King.
You are listening to the program Bookshelf on Iran Radio with Sheikh Yasir, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد وعجل فرجهم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته Welcome dear listeners to our program Bookshelf with me brother Yasir Ibrahim. Again congratulations to all our dear listeners on this being the period of the 10 days of Fajr. The 10 days that culminate in the victory of the Islamic Revolution in Iran, or the Islamic Revolution of Iran, with the fleeing of the Shah to the United States of America eventually, and the arrival of Imam Khomeini 10 days prior to it. So the book that we would like to mention and draw our listeners' attention to is a book that is very old, but it's a very good book. It is something, you know, good to glance in. It's not a very difficult book, obviously. It is a book that is titled Reunion with the Beloved. And it is a book that, you know, we will speak about more in our next segment. So basically, it also shows a relationship between Imam Khomeini, rahmatullah alayhi, and his second son, which is Sayyid Ahmed Khomeini, who passed away very soon after the passing of Imam Khomeini, rahmatullah alayhi, in June of 1989. Sayyid Ahmed passed away very soon afterwards. Exactly when, I can't remember. So this particular book is a exchange of letters, as we will speak about more in our next segment that deals with this particular book and the details concerning this book. So please stay tuned.
Allahu Akbar, Khomeini Rahbar. Allahu Akbar, Khomeini Rahbar.
Our bosses couldn't cope with the idea of an 80-year-old Ayatollah, which they didn't even know what an Ayatollah was, who lived on garlic and onions and yogurt, directing a revolution that was about to topple America's most important ally.
Welcome back, dear listeners, to our program Bookshelf with me, Brother Yasir Ibrahim. So the book that we have introduced to our dear listeners was titled Reunion with the Beloved. It is a book that compiles the letters that were exchanged between Sayyid Ahmed Khomeini, Imam Khomeini's second son, and Imam Khomeini, rahmatullah alayhi, himself. So Imam Khomeini had two sons, Sayyid Mustafa Khomeini, Sayyid Ahmed Khomeini. Sayyid Mustafa was, according to majority of reports, assassinated in Iraq, in the city of Najaf. And he is buried, alhamdulillah, within the mausoleum and within the haram of Amir al-Mu'mineen, Ali ibn Abi Talib, alayhi salam, in Najaf. So for those of you who have been to Najaf, there's a small room right next to the haram and the shrine of Amir al-Mu'mineen, alayhi salam. In that particular room, Sayyid Mustafa Khomeini is buried. Sayyid Ahmed, as we mentioned, was with his father as soon as he arrived, was with his father in France for a little while, visited him and so on and so forth. As we know, Imam Khomeini was exiled to three places, first to Turkey, then to Iraq, then Kuwait did not allow him to come. From then, France accepted him and invited him to go to France. And from France is when he came back to Iran. So this particular exchange of letters is between Imam Khomeini and Sayyid Ahmed during that particular time when the Imam was in exile, and then after the victory of the Islamic Revolution until the demise of Imam Khomeini, rahmatullah alayh. So this book was first published in 1995 by the Institute for Compilation and Publication of the Works of Imam Khomeini, rahmatullah alayh, the International Affairs Department, which is based in Tehran, the capital of the Islamic Republic of Iran. Unfortunately, the translator of this book is not mentioned. It is obvious that this book is translated because Imam Khomeini did not write in English. That was obvious. But unfortunately, the name of the translator is not mentioned. This book begins with an introduction by the eldest grandson of Imam Khomeini, rahmatullah alayhi, who alhamdulillah is still alive and well, is still amongst us, that is Sayyid Hassan Khomeini, who is the oldest son of Sayyid Ahmed. He has, if I'm not mistaken, two other brothers, Sayyid Ali and Sayyid Yasir, who are also the sons of Sayyid Ahmed rahmatullah alayh. So as I mentioned, these letters start from 1970, which is obviously the time when Imam Khomeini himself was in Iraq, and then goes all the way till the 80s, which is, you know, after the victory of Islamic Revolution in 1979, and obviously the advices that Imam gave Sayyid Ahmed while Sayyid Ahmed was in Qom or in other places of Iran, and while Imam Khomeini was in Jamaran in Tehran at that particular moment in time. So inshallah, in our next segment, we will read one of the letters for the benefit of our dear listeners. So please stay tuned.
Among the sacred texts we have received to help us understand where we came from and where we are going as a human race are most rich in helping us find our direction. They narrate stories of our past. But where have they brought us? Where are their messages now? Are we the people of belief, or have we become the people of the boxes? Is there wisdom trapped in our bookshelves? Bookshelves, bookshelves, bookshelves.
Welcome back, dear listeners, to our program Bookshelf. With me, Brother Yasser Ibrahim. The book that we have introduced to our dear listeners was titled Reunion with the Beloved. It is the collection of letters exchanged between Imam Khomeini rahmatullah alayh and Sayyid Ahmed Khomeini rahmatullah alayh, the second son of Imam Khomeini rahmatullah alayh. So the letter that we would like to read is dated December 16th, 1984. This was after the victory of the Islamic Revolution. So Imam was in Iran at this particular time. In the name of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, the compassionate, the merciful. So this is a letter given to Sayyid Ahmed when Imam dedicated a particular book that is known as Adab al-Salah to Sayyid Ahmed. Adab al-Salah is maybe one of the books that we have mentioned in this program. If not, we will mention it at a later date. It's a very important book in the writings of Imam Khomeini, rahmatullah alayhi. Anyway, for a later time. I dedicate my book, the Adab al-Salah, the Rites of Prayer, of which I gain nothing but regret over the past years when I had the energy to purge myself. And now in old age with empty hands and a heavy load and a long way to traverse with lame legs to my dear son Ahmed, who is young and has the energy to benefit by it and to attain a real ascension by the guidance of those who know, the Ahl al-Ma'rifah. Contents of which are derived from the Holy Quran, the noble traditions, and the words of the grandees. Perhaps he will then detach his heart from the deep darkness and find a way to the real purpose of humanity, to which the noble prophets and saints had attained and had invited others to it. My son, convert yourself into a fermented divine nature and rescue yourself from the whirlpool of perdition and waves of selfishness and ride to Noah's Ark, which is the ship of wilaya, or guardianship. And it is said, he who rode it, the ship of guardianship, was saved, and he who turned away from it perished. My son, try to walk, even if limping, in the straight path, which is Allah's path. Give the hearty and frayed movements the tinge of divinity and morality, and serve the people because they are God's creatures. So this is defining prayer. So basically, Imam Khomeini rahmatullah alayhi is telling his son that whatever you do, the most important thing is your salah, your prayer. And it is something that without, you will never be able to reach Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And we ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to give us the ability to, first of all, read this book, understand it, and then put it into practice. Because it, as Imam says, it is that which will enlighten our souls and our existence by means of that salah. Inshallah, until next time, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah wa barakatuh.
You just listened to the program Bookshelf on Iran Radio with Sheikh Yasir, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
in the limelight.
The U.S. president views the Gaza bombed-out territory as prime real estate, but Palestinians aren't going anywhere. Concerning this issue, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Please stay tuned for the first part. Middle East High Roads, people are moving north to get back to their homes and see what happened, and turn around and leave. There is no water and no electricity. Steve Witkoff, billionaire real estate developer and U.S. President Donald Trump's West Asia envoy, spoke these words to Axios as if he were describing an unfortunate inconvenience. But look closer, and you will see the blueprint. This is the outcome Trump wants, and the Zionist regime Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has already set it in motion. Gaza was never meant to be rebuilt. It was meant to be emptied, flattened, erased. And who better to oversee this clearing out than real estate tycoons? To Trump and Witkoff, Gaza is not a people's homeland. It is a development opportunity. A prime stretch of Mediterranean coastline waiting to be repurposed once its inhabitants have been removed. Trump has made no secret of how he views Gaza as prime real estate, marveling at its phenomenal location on the sea and its best weather, as though he were surveying land for a luxury resort. He does not see Gaza as part of Palestine. He does not see it as a homeland belonging to its people. He sees it as an untapped opportunity for the wealthy, a playground for investors, a future resort for tourists and foreigners, everyone except the Palestinians of Gaza. But Gaza is not real estate for sale. It is not a developmental project. It is not a resort for outsiders. Gaza is part of Palestine. The U.S. regime did not spend billions of dollars, deploy thousands of tons of bombs, and oversee the obliteration of 70% of Gaza's buildings so that the territory could be reconstructed. The bombs were never meant to make way for rebuilding. They were meant to ensure there was nothing left. The idea that Gaza's surviving population, those who the bombs did not damage to kill, would be allowed to reclaim their land was never part of the plan. And Trump has made it clear. There is no alternative. During a recent news conference, a journalist challenged him on his suggestion that Palestinians from Gaza could be sent to Jordan or Egypt, noting that both states had refused, and asking whether pressures such as tariffs may be used to enforce their land. Trump's response, dripping with arrogance, was chilling in his certainty. They will do it. They will do it. They're gonna do it. It was not a suggestion or a negotiation, but a declaration, an assumption that power, pressure, and sheer force of will can move nations like pieces on a chessboard, that people can be transferred, displaced, erased, all because he says so. Trump has built his entire political legacy on combating migration, sealing borders, building walls, banning refugees, and treating migration as an existential threat to the U.S. He speaks of asylum seekers in his country and an invasion of criminals who must be stopped and deported. Yet, when it comes to Palestinians, he is the architect of forced migration. This is not just hypocrisy. It is also a reversal of Trump's own deal of the century. That plan, despite being overwhelmingly skewed in the Zionist regime's favor, nominally included the establishment of a Palestinian state. It recognized Gaza as part of that future state, a weak, fragmented entity designed to exist under the Zionist regime's thumb. Even this illusion of statehood was too much for Trump to uphold. By endorsing the forced removal of Gaza's population, he's not just modifying his plan, he is abandoning it altogether. The two-state solution, weak and illusory as it was under his vision, has now been erased entirely in favor of the doctrine advocated by child killer Netanyahu and Finance Minister Bezalel Smotrich, permanent displacement and ethnic cleansing.
Thank you.